Well, good morning, great men and women of God. I call you that, as we do every Sunday, because what that song says is actually true of you. And I love the line that says, I once was so lost, but now I'm found. And this is what we believe. We did not find ourselves, but we were found by Him. And that His love for us, it is deep, and that it is constant, and that He seeks us out, and that He declares that we're His. And that makes you great. So good morning, great men and women of God. My name is Jonathan. I'm the executive pastor. Last week, I led you through the beginning of a new series that we are calling Grace-Filled. I'm really excited about this series. We're going to spend 5 weeks looking at this. The idea is really simple. It's just this, that the missing ingredient in most of our close relationships is not love, and it's not even oftentimes effort, but it's actually grace. And our definition of grace is real simple. Grace is when we don't give people what they deserve. And I don't care what the relationship is. I don't care if it's marriage, if it is parenting, if it is a close friendship. I don't care if it's us here at church. When we start giving each other what we deserve, that relationship is going to change. And it's going to change from life-giving and supportive to suffocating and dysfunctional. Grace, it is love applied. It is what we long for, and it really is the only hope for close, intimate relationships. Now, I hope last week, if you were here, you heard the sermon, I hope that you left feeling inspired by this. I hope you left thinking, man, he's onto something. I'm going to do it. I'm going to give grace to all of the people in my life. If so, you probably discovered something rather quickly, maybe even by Sunday afternoon. Grace is really hard, right? It's really hard to live this out. There's like this paradox when it comes to grace in close relationships, and this is the paradox. The times that you will need to show grace the most, so the times when the relationship is most needing you to be grace-filled, those will be the times you least want to show it. Have you discovered this? Those will be the times when there's just something inside of you that just doesn't want to give it. We all know we need grace. We have that in common. But a lot of times, instead of bonding over that mutual need that we have with somebody else and freely just kind of giving and receiving it, we wind up withholding it in those moments where the person that we're in relationship with is most in need of it. That's the paradox of grace. It's frustrating, right? It's confusing at times. But we can understand this. We can figure this out. And I even think that we can begin in our lives and in our close relationships to get ahead of this a little bit. And that's what I want us to talk about today as we continue to explore this topic. I just want to do two things today. One is I want us to understand why this is so hard. And I want us to answer this question. Why is it hardest to give grace in those moments where grace is needed the most? And then at the end, I want to challenge us to get ahead of it. And I want to challenge us to apply this in one big challenge that I think, I was reflecting on this earlier, I think it's actually probably the most challenging application I've ever had to any sermon I've ever preached in my entire life. So we've got that to look forward to, but we'll get there later. For now, if you have a Bible, turn to Philippians 2. Let's dive in here. Philippians 2, verse 1 through 11. This is a classic verse. If you've been in church for any length of time, you've possibly heard this. The Apostle Paul, he's writing to a group of believers, and he's encouraging them to give grace. He's encouraging them to not give each other what you deserve, right? I want you to listen to his language, and then I'm going to come back to some of the specifics and answer this question, why is it so hard for us? Philippians 2, verse 1. Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. Now, notice what comes first here, right? He isn't just starting with a command. He's not just saying, hey, be grace-filled with each other. He's starting actually with our unity with Christ. He's starting with the comfort that we've received from his love. Remember, we read the Apostle Paul last week, and he said, it's Christ's love that compels us. We talked about that idea. You'll only be able to give grace to the degree that you personally have experienced it and received it from God. And that's where he's starting us. He's not just saying, hey, could you all be better people, love each other more? No. He's saying, in light of what you've received from Christ, in light of the love love and the comfort and the grace that he's given you, then be like-minded. Then love. He continues, verse 3. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. I mean, that's grace, right? This is it. This is not giving people what they deserve. And then he gives us a picture and reminds us of how Christ did this for us. Verse 5, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. So he experienced all of these things, none of which he deserved. That was the nature of Christ's life. And he never gave people what he deserved. He always was humble. And look at what happens. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place, gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Now, could Jesus have shown up on earth and said, hey, everyone, this is who I am, this is what I'm capable of, treat me well, or I will rain down hell upon all of you? I mean, he could have, right? I mean, he is God. He had that capacity, but he didn't. And in fact, in Jesus, we see this incredibly challenging figure who never once fought for his rights, never once looked to his interests. And what Paul's saying is real simple. He's saying, Christ gave us this thing that we never would deserve by receiving what he didn't deserve. That was the nature of what he did. It was grace. And he says, listen, if you guys have any encouragement from that, if you have any comfort from the way that he has loved you, then do the same in your relationships. That's the vision of what we're being called into, this missing ingredient, this mindset that's needed in our close relationships, is that we receive what we don't deserve to make sure that the other person never gets what they do deserve. But I want you to notice, as Paul challenges us in this way, he kind of just casually almost mentions these three things right at the beginning that I actually think he mentions them as kind of cautions. I think that they are the crux of the matter when it comes to why is it so difficult for us to give grace when we're sitting across from someone that we know needs it, and we've got to resist that urge to give them what they deserve. Why is it so hard to live this out? You may be excited about grace. You may be determined to give it to those people that are close to you. But when you get in the situation, I really believe these three things are going to be the things that spring to mind, that they're going to kind of enter your heart, enter the relationship, and they're going to make it enormously difficult to actually give grace. Last week, I mentioned the book Grace-Filled Marriage. Dr. Tim Kimmel wrote it. It's worth picking up if you're married or if you want to be married at some point. He talks about these three things, and he talks about them as lenses. And I love that metaphor that he uses. He says that they're like glasses that we put on in a relationship in those difficult moments. And they make it so that we only see certain things, and there's other things that we can't see at all. And when we're viewing the other person through those lenses, it's almost impossible to bring ourselves to give them grace. So what I want to do today is I want to just walk through these three lenses that I think are really the reason that grace is so hard for us. And then we're going to come back to them at the end and talk about what to do with them. But I want to challenge you to do this. I don't know if you take notes or something. Would you write these down today? Maybe type them into your cell phone or something, however you take notes. Because these are going to be some things that require from you some thought about your close relationships. I'm going to explain them, but it's not just going to be like, oh, I got it, I'll do that. You're going to have to really chew on these a little bit to really understand how they are at play in your life. So write these down. Are you ready? Why is it so hard to give grace? Here's the first reason. It's in verse 3. Paul says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. This is something that we will call the me lens. Me lens. This is when we view the world through the filter of me. We do this a lot. Selfish ambition, vain conceit. It means that first thing and that only thing that I'm able to see is my concerns, my feelings, my needs, And when we're looking through this me lens, we become unwilling or unable to really see the feelings and the needs and the concerns of the other person in the relationship. I mean, we can kind of see them, but we can see them enough to know how they're affecting us, and then we respond out of that. When you're wearing that me lens, there's very little room in the relationship for we, or for us, or for you. We start interpreting everything through how it impacts me. I think we do this in a lot of relationships, and I want to encourage you to think about how you would maybe put this lens on. As I was thinking about it, the one that immediately popped to mind for me was parenting. I have three boys. They are 15, 11, and 10. And I still remember the day that they said their first word. And I was just so excited that they knew how to talk. As I get older, I find myself less excited that they know how to talk. And sometimes I've noticed they have begun to form some rather strong opinions about my parenting and about me as a father. Not too long ago, I was playing a game with two of my sons who will remain nameless, and they started to fight and argue over something in the game, and they're very competitive, and so they were doing that thing. And I said, listen, if you guys are going to argue, I'm done. Let's just put the game away. And the fighting got worse, and so I said, that's it. Separate corners, like I've seen boxing. Let's just separate them. Go to your rooms. And one of my sons thought that that particular moment was a great moment to give me some feedback on how I'm doing as a father. And he said, you're being unfair. This was clearly my brother's fault. He started it. I've had a hard day. I just wanted to play a game with my dad. And that was manipulative. I saw what he was doing there. And you let my brother wreck it, and here we are, and all this sort of stuff. Now, what was my first thought in that moment? My first thought was I felt personally attacked, right? Now, I understand now that that wasn't what was going on, but my first thought was I felt attacked. And what I wanted to do in that moment was to defend myself. I wanted to explain to him how good he has it, how wrong he was, and how wise my parenting choices were in that moment. I felt attacked. But of course, what was I doing? I was making it all about me, right? When in truth, there probably was a lot of things in that moment that were more important than me feeling criticized. And it was a struggle to not react out of that. That's the me lens. And I think that's one of the things that makes parenting so difficult is to be a good parent. It is the discipline of setting aside the me lens to actually love and raise your children. Because we have our hearts invested in it, right? But it's true with any relationship. The me lens can kind of crop up, and all of a sudden, we see the relationship, but we're not seeing it as a relationship. We're seeing it solely from the perspective of me. You know, what makes it so hard to set aside is you are a part of the relationship, right? There's truth in the me lens. The situation does affect you. Nobody can argue with that. But when you start looking through the me lens, there begins to be very little room for grace for anyone except you. And that's what you start fighting for. And the relationship becomes suffocating very quickly. So that's the first reason that I think it's hard, is I think we put on that me lens, and all of a sudden it's impossible to give grace. So write that down. We're going to come back to it in just a minute. Here's the second reason that Paul mentions. It's hard to give grace. And so he cautions us, in humility, value others above yourselves. I want to call this the piousness lens. And what basically we do with this is we begin to value our contribution above the other person's contribution. And specifically, I think this is how it works. We start to measure our goodness against their brokenness. And we're both a mixture of those things. I'm good and I'm broken at the same time, and so is the person I'm in a relationship with. But we start to look at our goodness, and we start to look at their brokenness, and we compare the two, and we become unable to truly, genuinely see our flaws, to truly, genuinely see our mistakes, and we become unable to truly, genuinely see what is good about the other person. And we're valuing our contribution above their contribution. And when we start measuring our good intentions against their negative behavior, like sitting here now, we can see it. But in the moment we miss this, nobody could stand up to that measurement. Right? It's the best of us against the worst of them. Of course they're going to lose. You know, I was thinking about where I do this. The obvious one in my mind, and there's a lot of them, is whenever one of my close relationship struggles, or specifically like in my marriage, when my wife and I are sideways with each other. Here's the challenge of marriage, and maybe it's just the challenge of relationships in general, but especially marriage. I know my motives, right? I know my heart. I know what I'm thinking. I really only know my wife's actions, right? That's all I know. And so if she does something that hurts me, I know it. I know that I'm hurt. I know what she did, and I know that I'm hurting. And my tendency is to say, well, she was trying to hurt me. She's a bad wife, right? But if you flip it, if I do something that hurts her, I know my motives. I know my heart. I'm generally a good person. And so my tendency is to say, when my behaviors hurt her, well, I didn't mean to hurt her. I'm a misunderstood husband, right? This is the piousness lens. She's bad. I'm misunderstood because I know my heart, right? And we start evaluating that relationship through our good intentions and the other person's bad behavior. So when I overspend, it's because I work hard and I deserve something nice. And when she overspends, it's because she's undisciplined, right? When I'm late, it's because I'm juggling all of the responsibilities that I try to maintain for my family. And when she's late, it's because she doesn't value my time. I could go on, but you see the problem with thinking this way, right? Inevitably, she can never win. Remember the definition of self-righteousness? It's condemning someone because they like to sin differently than you do, right? That is the nature of the piousness lens. And we may not think of ourselves as a self-righteous person, and I would guess that you're not generally a self-righteous person, but often the last bastion of self-righteousness is in a close relationship where we have been hurt. And that is the moment that we indulge in condemning that other person because their sin is different than ours. We start looking at our goodness, we start looking at their worst moments, and when you view the relationship that way, I mean, there is no room for grace, right? That's the piousness lens. I think it makes grace incredibly hard when we put that lens over our eyes. Write that down, we will come back to it. Here's a third reason, or a third caution that Paul gives. It's from verse 4. He says, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. This one we'll call the scorekeeping lens. And basically what you're doing when you have the scorekeeping lens on is you are keeping track of your own interest. Specifically, you're counting the number of times that the other person meets your needs, gives you what you want, and fulfills your desires. And when you have this lens on, you're kind of constantly aware of how many times the thing you want in the relationship happens. And you're also constantly aware and probably keeping track of how many times the thing you don't want in the relationship happens. I think we do this a lot of ways in a lot of relationships. I think this one is particularly subtle because it's one of those things that, like, you don't really realize you're doing it until all of a sudden the score is way out of balance. I think it creeps into the way people go to church. I see this all the time. We show up to church, and it's like, well, you know, am I going to get fed today? This better be good. I think it creeps into our friendships. Do you have that friend that you kind of keep track of who initiated last time, who had you over to their house most recently, who's sharing the deepest? I remember a time, this was years ago, I found out that my brother was upset with me because I didn't call him as frequently as he wanted me to. And my first thought, I've grown and matured since then, but my first thought was I pulled the scorecard out and I looked, and what did I discover? But I was the one who called him the last time we talked on the phone, right? And that is like power in the relationship. And of course, my immediate response is, well, this is ridiculous. I called him the last time. Who does he think he is? I can't believe that he's upset with me. I'm not going to call him until he calls me. And he must have said the same thing because we didn't talk on the phone for 2 years because we were keeping score. We both had our score sheets. We were tracking our interests. And the scorekeeping that we were doing meant that there was no room for grace. You know, it's interesting. Scorekeeping and friendship, it's never really about winning. It's not like we're keeping track of who loves the most, right? Scorekeeping is almost always about not losing. Scorekeeping resents a deficit in friendship. Scorekeeping is overly concerned with fairness. Can I just point this out about fairness? Fairness is an entirely human obsession. You realize that, right? Like, God cares zero about fairness. And so if he did, you know, we would be dead, but he doesn't. And so when we start talking in a relationship about what is fair, and we pull out the scorecard and we say, well, look, see, I'm ahead of you. You need to catch up. That would only be fair. We cut God and we cut grace out of that relationship because he doesn't care about that. And once you start keeping that score sheet, you've already lost because you're never going to feel like the relationship is even because relationships are inherently uneven. And God understands that. The scorekeeping lens robs us of just the joy of giving to somebody else, right? Grace is incredibly hard when you're keeping score. I think those are the three cautions. Paul lays them out there for us. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, so don't use the me lens. He says, rather in humility, value others above yourselves. Put off the piousness lens, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interest of others. Don't use that scorekeeping lens. Tear up the scorecard. He's saying, because when you do, when you put those lenses on, you're inevitably going to get stuck in your relationship. You're inevitably, because of those lenses, going to seek to give the other person exactly what you think they deserve. And it's those lenses that make grace particularly hard. All right, I want to pause there, and I want to give you a chance to reflect on these. That's a lot to throw at you. Before we continue to talk about them, I just want you to ponder how these are at work in your life. If you didn't write them down, I think we have them up there. Write them down now, and just reflect a little bit on these lenses. And maybe here's a question that you can reflect with God on over these next few minutes. God, which one of these is most at work in my life? And maybe just begin to ponder that and see if he doesn't bring a relationship to mind and see if he doesn't draw your attention to one of those lenses. Let's go to God and interact with him on this. Paul says, be careful. If you're going to love each other, you got to be careful. These things are going to jump into your mind in those moments that grace is most needed and make it the most difficult. I would say, just some self-disclosure here, I think of these three, I struggle with them all at times. The one that I struggle with the most is the me lens, probably most consistently. How many of you can relate to that? That's your struggle, okay? Awesome. Well, let's keep going. How many of you can relate to the piousness lens? Who felt like that was yours? Okay, what about the scorekeeping lens? Was there anybody? Okay, all right. I mean, we do all of these at different times. There's probably one that's your go-to that you come back to. You probably noticed a theme with these. At the core of all of these lenses is self, right? It's that orientation, seeing the world through self. I think all of these are inspired by this attempt to self-protect. Why do we put these lenses on? I mean, the short answer is it feels safer to us. We begin to feel like if we don't look out for our needs, then no one will. And then when we're hurt by someone who's close to us, that kind of just reinforces that belief. And so these lenses go on really quickly as a means to self-protection. Here's what I've realized, though, in relationships. When self-protection enters a relationship, grace leaves. Those two things, they don't coexist in relationships. Timothy Keller nails it when he says this. He says, self-centeredness by its very character makes you blind to your own fault while being hypersensitive, offended, and angered by that of others. The result is always a downward spiral into self-pity, anger, despair, as the relationship gets eaten away to nothing. See, when we put self at the center and we protect it at all costs, our relationships begin to be eaten away. And eventually there's not much left. It's kind of this suffocating mess. So here's what I want to challenge us to do with. And I think, I really think this is probably the most challenging thing for us as humans to do. This is the most difficult sermon application I've ever asked. I've never asked anything this hard. So here's the challenge. Stop protecting yourself in your close relationships. Isn't that hard? Stop protecting yourself. This is true. Either you are your protector or God is. There is no like 50-50 split. It is an either-or proposition. And we see this when Paul describes the mindset of Christ. He says, put the mindset of Christ on in your relationships. And then he describes a man who never once defended himself, who never once protected himself, who wholly entrusted himself to God's protection. And then in the end, it was God who elevated him. It was God who defended him. And if we're going to deal with these lenses and somehow find a way to bring grace to bear in those moments when the other person needs it the most, it is because we are going to set aside self-protection and allow God to defend us. You know, what makes that so difficult is self-protection. It's something that is literally, it's hardwired into our DNA. I mean, it's what kept us alive as a species when, like, lions and bears would come after us. I mean, that intuitive, it's a fight-or-flight response to a situation that feels dangerous. And the same thing happens. That response springs to life when a relationship feels unsafe for us or when we get hurt by someone emotionally, and it springs to life. And in response, we put on these lenses to protect ourselves, to help us understand the world around us. And when we are protecting ourselves, grace seems insane. It's like you don't have grace for a lion who's about to eat you, right? And in self-protection mode, grace seems insane. And that instinct that kept us safe from animals out there all of a sudden is robbing us of the one thing that gives us life in relationships, and that's the ability to give each other grace. Now, if you're a good person, you're probably wondering at this point, what about relationships where somebody really needs to protect themselves? What about relationships where there's abuse? What about relationships where there's infidelity or substance issues? Or what about those relationships? Well, let me clarify. Grace isn't blind, nor is it without nerve endings. So if you're going to be close to a human, you have to acknowledge this, that you are being close to something that has phenomenal hurtful potential. That's what it means to be in a close relationship with a human being. And because of that, we have to acknowledge this, that grace is not without boundaries. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. And please, look at me for a second. There are going to be times in your relationships where God leads you to redefine a relationship because of the hurtful potential of the other person. There's going to be times where God may, in fact, actually lead you to basically end a relationship because of the hurtful potential of the other person. That does not mean that you can't have grace for that person. A lack of grace is not the same as having no boundaries. And having a boundary with someone is not the same as giving them what they deserve. Okay? So when we talk about stop protecting yourself, what I'm not talking about is this kind of boundaryless grace that never acknowledges the hurtful potential of the other human being you're in a relationship with. That's actually codependence. That's not grace, and there's a big difference. What I am talking about when I say stop protecting yourself is this. Let God protect you by taking off the me lens. That's one of the ways that you embrace his protection. You don't have to wear that lens because you've entrusted yourself to the protection of God. And maybe a question that would help you take off that lens is simply this. How are they hurting? Write that question down. When my son is criticizing my parenting, instead of jumping in and defending me because I'm hurt in that moment, I need to maintain my ability to see his hurt as legitimate. I've got to ask that question, how is he hurting here? Or I'm not going to be able to have grace for him. See, you can trust God as your protector by acknowledging the other person's very real feelings. That's grace. Their hurt matters, and we don't have to minimize it to have our hurt. Their feelings matter, and acknowledging those feelings does not diminish your hurt or what they've done to you. It just doesn't. See, when God is your protector, you can understand their heart. You can understand their interests. And you're not afraid of losing something. It's not just that, though. I think it's also this. When I say stop protecting yourself and let God protect you, what I mean is we have to systematically take off the piousness lens. And it's hard. But you've got to realize you don't need it. And I think maybe the question that can help you in a struggling relationship when you don't want to give grace but that you know the person needs it is just understanding what is good about them in that moment. When my wife's behavior hurts me, I have to not lose sight of her value or I will never be able to love her with grace. And one of the ways that you can trust God as your protector is just by simply acknowledging in the midst of a struggling moment the goodness and the value of the other person, even when you're struggling with them. Even when they've sinned against you, they still have value and worth, right? That's what the gospel teaches us. Forcing yourself to see it doesn't let them off the hook. It actually points you both to Christ. So that's one of the ways we take the mindset of Christ is he saw our value while we were yet sinners. And when God is your protector and you stop protecting yourself, then you can see their value even if they've sinned against you. Lastly, I would say this, that to stop protecting yourself and allow God to protect you, what I mean is we have got to find a way to take off the scorekeeping lens. You got to tear up that scorecard. And maybe a question that would help you take it off is this, what am I really measuring in this relationship? We often keep track of superfluous things, but there's a bigger issue that we've yet to name, and we're bent out of shape about something that doesn't matter. I'm resenting my brother because I'm counting phone calls. Well, is it about phone calls? Of course not. I have to identify what I'm tracking and why. What is the score that is causing the resentment? And if I can't name it, if I can't be willing to talk about it, I will never have grace for that other person. The scorecard's about measuring behavior. Grace is actually about not measuring it. Grace is about engaging at the heart level with what really matters. And see, when God is your protector, you could say, hey, I'm going to stop keeping track of my interests and engage with this person. You know, I think really one of the most challenging things that we can do in our life is to switch off self-protect mode in our close personal relationships. I mean, ultimately, it is a miracle when we do it. Only God can empower us to do that. Loving people with grace is hard. And if you haven't realized it already, there is pain in grace. There is. I think there is a deeper, more damaging pain in self-protect mode. We pick up these lenses because we want to be safe, we want to be comfortable, we want to be in control, and we turn to what we can control in the relationship. I think that's what makes Paul's passage so incredible. Do you remember what he said at the beginning of this passage? He said, therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love. I mean, that's the issue, right? There's the safety and the comfort that we can carve out for ourselves by controlling what we can. And then there's the safety and the comfort that we receive from him by receiving his love on his terms. And when we do that, when we finally receive his love that is deep and that is constant for us, we find this sort of safety and this sort of comfort that we could literally never manufacture for ourselves through all of our efforts to control our close personal relationships and get the other person to understand our perspective. I think there's this one last lens that we've got to use, and this comes out of the Grace-Filled Marriage book. Kimmel calls it simply this, the grace lens. And that's when we begin to view each other through this lens that says, God gave me grace. And I'm going to view you from that perspective, that God gave me grace, that I've received encouragement, I've received comfort from the love of Jesus, who never gives me what I deserve. And even when I sin against him, he sees my hurting heart, he understands it. Even though he's holy and I sin, he doesn't just see my bad behavior. He sees the potential of who we will be if we're well-loved. And when you look at his scorecard, it is totally blank because he keeps no record of wrong. And when we receive comfort from that love, from being loved that way, it empowers us to begin to set aside those lenses and bring grace to bear on those moments where they need it the most, but naturally in our own power, we would give it the least. Let me challenge you with these lenses to reflect on them this week, to see them at work in your life, to see those moments where these lenses are screaming at you, telling you what to do. And in those moments, receive comfort from his love and stop giving them what they deserve. Let me pray for us. God, we just confess our utter dependence upon you to do this stuff. There is nothing more unnatural for us than to live in grace-filled ways. And so, God, we desperately need you to teach us. We desperately need you to comfort us in your love so that we can begin letting other people off the hook, so that we can begin not giving them what they deserve. So God, lead us this week. Show us these lenses at work in our lives and simultaneously show us your deep love for us. Lead us to be grace-filled. In your name I pray. Amen.